Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got it! A perfect game! And one done by the King!
Hey, you! Are you right in that
ball? Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
Well, Brody, I was hoping that both of our teams would make the NBA Cup tonight so that we would have interesting podcast content, but your Knicks let me down and they got eliminated, and so my Thunder will be facing the Milwaukee Bucks tonight, and frankly, that is much less interesting to discuss on a baseball podcast, so I just wanted to let you know that your Knicks let me down.
That is fair. They did let me down as well. I'm very tired of Trae Young. He has done this now, and I don't care about this at all. I'm not tuning into a random game on a weeknight. I just was aware tangentially that the Knicks got knocked out of this thing by the Hawks. Again, like, I just, you know, like, they don't really care about the regular season. This is new, though, because last year I did, you know, watch every single Knick game. Year before, I watched most. So, like, this is a few years that I've been kind of paying attention. And this year, they actually have, like, real expectations, and I'm kind of tapped out. So, like, maybe it's because the league is not in a great place. It feels to me it's in, like, an MLB in, like, 2013 type place right now, where it's, like, the stars that everybody knew, aging, retiring, teams that, you know, were around, like, for a long time are on the decline. There's no real super team. There's no, you know, there's not, like, a good villain. There's no real heroes. Like, it's just kind of, it's like in the Mike Trout needs to be more marketable era of of the cycle. And I'm sure that it'll rebound soon, but there's no, I don't know, there's no, like, there's no pull. There's no draw right now for me. So, I'll watch when the Knicks are good. You know, I root for them, obviously, and I watch them as much as I can or when I think to, but I got to wait for, you know, towards the end of the season when it actually starts to matter more. I watch on Christmas and then maybe, like, over the early parts of the year, that's my main basketball time. But before New Year's, eh.
All right, fair enough, man. Yeah, I guess I'm a bit more of a hoops sicko than you are. I've been tapped into some random-ass League Pass games on some Wednesday nights here. But yeah,
League Pass helps.
League Pass is great. I love it. It does feel like the league is in a bit of a transitional period right now. You know, you said it with the, like, aging superstars. You know, I mean, we come from the generation where, you know, we were witnessing Kevin Durant, for example, like when he got drafted into the league. I mean, that was at, like, right around the very start of my personal basketball fandom. I mean, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love the year after that, Steph Curry 2009, Kyrie a couple of years later. Those guys are all aging 30s now, you know. LeBron James, yep. 40. It seems like they're so dead set on continuing to market the same players that they were in 2012. That, you
know, 2016 mainly.
Yeah, 2016, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, with so many new, like, superstars in the league, I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on my favorite team. I was so surprised to see in the Cup semifinal game between the Thunder and the Houston Rockets, on the NBA's actual website, the copy that they wrote underneath the matchup literally said, "This may not be the marquee matchup that people were expecting, but," and, oh, like, what's wrong with you? These are the
why
teams.
Why would you? You're shooting yourself in the foot.
The Thunder were the one seed last year, man, and then they added Isaiah Hartenstein. Like, the Rockets also have insane potential. I've loved watching Amen Thompson all year. Like, Tari Eason, Alperen Şengün, Fred VanVleet had a terrible game the other night, but last time they played, he absolutely fried us. So that's, like, an incredible rivalry right now. Thunder Rockets is must-see TV, and they're treating it like it was the Rangers Diamondbacks World Series, which I also enjoyed. A little bit frustrating. Either way, I mean, this Thunder Bucks game is tipping off right now as we speak. I would have loved to be able
I'll throw it on.
Give you a little bit of a... You know, it would have been nice to have Thunder Knicks with the
podcast.
That
would have been... I would have gotten up for that. That would have been interesting. But that is also, that's what I mean by it's in a 2013, 2014 MLB state, because there were good games and they're good teams at the time, but like nobody cared because they weren't actual like household names. And it's the argument that we used to have back then, which is in order to have a household name, it needs to be created. It needs to be invented, which like, yeah, that's sort of true. Like Mike Trout deserved to be, but he never was. And I think that's kind of overblown. Like I think he was, but the NBA is now having the same conversation of what's the health of the league that we got really tired of hearing in baseball for like a decade. I think that's what's coming right now for the NBA, whether you like it or not. And baseball's on the upswing because there's a lot of really good young stars. And there's big marketable teams that are doing good things. Like when the Dodgers and the Yankees are good, the league does well. And they were just in the World Series, obviously. So, you know, like those are the kinds of things that help. When LeBron and Steph square off three times in a row in the finals, good for the league. Now they're old. So, you know, if Wemby turns the Spurs into like an annual contender, or like Giannis almost did it with the Bucks, and I think most people probably know who he is.
I'd say so.
Just because he's so likable. They hire Doc Rivers and they fall apart. Like, you know, or at least they're worse than they were. But it's just...
They're in the cup right now.
This is what I'm saying. That's true. I know. That's a good point. Although the Lakers did win it last year, so what does that mean? But it's,
yeah, you're right. It's a great
point. All I'm saying is that it's transitional is the right word.
Yeah. And it's so messed up, too, because like the talent in the league right now is absolutely insane. Like there are so many elite players to the point where they're going to expand and add a couple teams like the next few years, I think. I think you said it, though, because like Major League Baseball sort of started to break out of that around like 2018, 2019, when we had like that new crop of elite superstars come into the league. We had Juan Soto, Vlad Guerrero, Ronald Acuna. I mean, those three alone
Judge.
Are like enough to... Well, Judge was around a little before that, but that was when he definitely kind
of turned
into the
player he is now. 17 was coming out party.
Yeah,
but when the Yankees have superstars, you know.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's a little bit weird to compare that to the current moment for the NBA, because it's like I feel like the talent has been there, like, and is just continuing, like, to come into the league. There seems to be, you know, elite players in the draft every year except for last year, but next year we're going to get right back into that with Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, I mean, Derek Queen, like, so many of these guys who the sky is the limit for. And yeah, I mean, I wish that these leagues, whether it's Major League Baseball or the NBA, would do a better job of being able to market elite players, especially young players who are going to be in the league for the next 10-15 years, when those players are not playing in New York or Los Angeles or Boston or Atlanta. But the last thing I'll say before we get to the sport that we're actually here to talk about on the podcast is this Trae Young shit with the Knicks. Like, here's the thing. I totally get it. He owns you guys. Like, he shows up to the Garden and puts Knicks through hell every single time. And I understand how frustrating that is. But I will say this. If I hear another fuck Trae Young chant at Yankee Stadium, I think I'm going to lose my mind. Because at that point...
Why is there no fuck Jose Altuve chants going out of the Garden? That's my problem.
That one I'd be okay with, actually. But yeah, I mean, he's totally just living rent-free in your head at that point. If you're chanting in the off-season at a different stadium about Trae Young, I mean,
it's because they don't win.
No,
it's because like the Hawks are not good, like the Astros, whatever. Yeah, they've beaten us like a bunch of times, and like, you know, obviously you have to hate Altuve, but Trae Young, first of all, it's basketball, so it can be constant for an entire game, and it happens all the time. It's like it is literally the most consistent beatdown like I've seen out of an athlete for one team. Like, the Hawks are not that good, but when they show up in New York, for some reason, Trae Young puts up 60 and 10. It's like, you know, where is this coming from? Why is it possible that he can do this against us and never lead the Hawks to, like, a playoff appearance? Like, aren't they, like, the 10 seed? He's frustrating. When he goes to the West, I'll be happy.
Oh, God.
He's, like, the only star who has stayed with his team for some reason. I don't know why he won't leave.
You
go
can't
away.
Get rid of him. Shit.
He won't go away.
Good luck to the Thunder. Good luck to the Knicks.
Yeah, good luck, Thunder.
Hope the Bucks lose.
SGA is fun to watch.
He's
right on.
Dude, SGA is amazing. He goes out there and he's a pure hooper. He's not a free throw merchant like some people say. That is a bullshit narrative that I reject wholeheartedly. Yeah, no, go Thunder, go Knicks. Hope the Bucks lose. Hope the Hawks fall in a hole, I guess, for you there. But yeah, why don't we get into baseball. This is a baseball podcast after all.
Trae Young is 6 months younger than me.
That's messed up.
I didn't know
that. That means he's like my age exactly. What's his birthday? Is he older than me?
September 19,
98. Okay, he's 1 month younger than me. Damn. All right. I have a question. Who was the first athlete that you realized, like, I mean, assuming it was like 6-7 years ago, you realized, holy shit, this guy's younger than me? Because I know who it was for me, but I'm curious. It was Juan Soto for you?
Like, well, because when they won, I was like, that dude's younger than me. Like, you know, like the NBA, you know, that happens. Like, because once you're a sophomore in college, the NBA all of a sudden is your age.
Exactly.
So there was definitely some of that. But I remember thinking, like, Soto is crazy young. I remember when we first heard about Dominguez, and he was like 15. And we were like, you know, however old we were, I don't know, what were we, like 20 or like 21? Whenever that was. I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah, we
just remember
20.
Thinking, like, that kid is young. He still is. But, I mean, basketball is weird because guys are around forever because they come in at 19. So, you know, all of a sudden you look up and, like, Trae Young, who you've been hating for years, is only 26 and he's younger than me. That's not fun for anybody. So, like, it's freaky. And then, you know, on the flip side of that, it is nice to get to watch guys play forever. Like, the fact that LeBron is still playing is crazy. Like, who was on the Celtics last year? Was that...
Are you thinking of Haslam from the Heat? Because he was the one that was like...
Wait a minute, hold on. Who? No.
Al Horford is definitely... It's probably the oldest guy on the Celtics. But like, he actually contributes to the team. Like, he's still a good player. Udonis Haslam was the one who was like 41.
Yeah, but I'm saying he's been around for 15, 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Haslam is... like, but I'm saying, like, last year in the finals, they brought, you know, Uncle Al out. Like, let him mess around. That's cool about the NBA because you know these guys for so long because they come in so young. And, like, baseball, the reason that Soto got paid as much as he did is because he did come in young, which nobody else, you know, shows up at the majors at 20 and especially wins a World Series at 20 after doing that. And not only just wins it, but is a huge part of why they win it. So that's why he ends up with his monster contract. And then... once he kind of breaks that dam, we've seen the floodgates open a little bit, and we have some more signings coming in. So is there one specific one you'd like to talk about?
Well, yes, but first, you bring up a lot of interesting stuff about Jason Dominguez, because like even just the past couple weeks or so, I've been hearing some talk of like prospect fatigue, which if you don't know what that is, it's just sort of like a general mental affliction baseball fans have when they've been hearing about a player for so long who they hear is going to be so good. And I think it's totally fair in the case of like a Michael Busch, for example, who was in the Dodgers system and was like a top 100 sort of fringe guy for like 3 or 4 years. Then he gets traded to the Cubs for his age 26 season, and then he gets to start finally at that point because the Dodgers just had so many players that he was blocked everywhere. In a case like that, I mean, I totally understand it, but Jason Dominguez is 21 years old. Like, that's so crazy. But yeah, and I mean...
it's because we heard about him when he was 15.
And
so,
it's because...
you know, he was never coming up at 8.
No, never. You know? I mean, not only did we hear about him when he was 15, MLB Network compared him to Mike Trout and Mickey Mantle when he was 15. So threw the kid into the fire straight from the get-go. Maybe that's what an elite Yankees prospect needs, to be honest. I mean, maybe that will end up being a good thing for him because, again, he is still just 21 years old. The athlete for me who kind of gave me that, oh shit, this guy's younger than me sensation was, I don't remember what year this was, but I was watching like the NCAA championship. It was one of those million years where Alabama was in
it. Villanova?
No. It was Alabama, and this is football, and it was Jalen Hurts, and I searched him because I was like, who is this guy? And he's 2 days younger than me, and I was like 19 at the time, and I was like, oh, that's a feeling I do not enjoy. Yeah, it's something that we all have to get used to.
Yeah, that's weird. A weird thing that will happen is just like you hear about these guys, especially football players, because they're so brolic, I guess. Like Saquon is barely older than me. I mean, he's a year older than me, but like that is when I would see pictures of him like in college or whatever, and I would be like, man, that's a man. That's like a real like athlete. Look at him. He's huge. And then I would think about it and be like, I could have looked like that. If I tried to do whatever he's done, I wouldn't have ended up looking like him. But I mean, like, if you train regularly for that long, like, you know, and you set a goal and you are driven, like, it's just, it was that moment that it's like, oh man, I'm wasting stuff. Like, you know?
Yeah.
That's not a fun realization. But you know what? as long as basketball players are going to be playing until they're in their 40s, I'll be all right for a little.
Well, this is the Mudville Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I'm your other host, Brody Staub.
And we are talking today about a plethora of moves that have gone down over the past couple weeks or so, including a few that we meant to touch on our last episode and just didn't get around to because we went so long on Juan Soto. It has been a hell of an offseason around the league. We have seen a lot of players traded that we expected to be traded, a few that seemed like sort of long shots, but deals did end up coming to fruition. So we're going to get into all of that today. Really exciting times around the league. A lot of moving around, a lot of superstars changing teams, a lot of implications for a lot of the best and the worst teams around the league, and we are going to get into all of it. But before we get into those trades, I want to talk about five signings that happened about a week ago or so, a little bit more now.
About a week ago.
That's a good reference. That's a good reference. So the first of those signings, and probably the biggest one that we have not touched on the pod yet, in the like week and a half since it happened, is Willy Adames signing with the San Francisco Giants for 7 years, $182 million. And frankly, I'm shocked that we were both wrong about this one. I really thought that one of us was going to be correct on this because I predicted him to the Dodgers. You predicted him to the Braves. I feel like those were both really good fits for him.
I felt so good about the Braves.
Yeah. But no, he ends up with the San Francisco Giants. They have been trying to get a free agent, major free agent, that is, for the past couple years now. We obviously saw what happened with Aaron Judge. I can't imagine what it was like for Giants fans to go through that. They tried to sign Carlos Correa, who failed his physical right after. Really cartoonish offseason they had in 2022, I believe that was. And and then they tried to get Otani as well last year, and that was just not going to happen. So kudos to them. Kudos to Buster Posey for being able to lure in the free agent that Farhad was not. Definitely a good start to the Posey as president of baseball operations era there in San Fran. They get a really good player in Willy Adames, coming off a almost five war season that he had with the Milwaukee Brewers. 32 home runs, positive player on both sides of the ball. He's a really great defender as well. From like a fantasy baseball standpoint, this might not be the best landing spot for him. Like, I don't think that the counting stats will be quite as high in San Fran as they might have been elsewhere. He's slotting into a less talented lineup than he would have had he signed with one of the teams that we predicted him to, and he's also playing in one of the biggest pitcher's parks in all of baseball. That
rough park factor out there in San Francisco.
It's real tough. So we'll see how that plays out for him, but I mean, I expect his game to translate pretty well regardless. Do you have any additional thoughts on Willy?
Totally. We made a huge mistake because in our predictions, we didn't say anybody to the Giants. And while that might not seem like a mistake on its face, because that's how every offseason goes, it did sort of seem like we should have been able to guess that this is the year that they would get a guy. Not necessarily their guy, not necessarily the guy, but a guy. And they finally did get a guy. And, you know, I like Adames a lot, but I mean, San Francisco, I'm trying to find the park factor list right now, and I'm very much struggling right now to find it. I know it's towards the bottom. It's an interesting move for them. You know, they did need to have, you know, someone come in as a free agent just because I think they needed to prove that they could get someone to sign there, especially since, again, as you said, Buster Posey is in his first year as a GM. That's honestly, I feel like on the top of their, like, their chalkboard is just like sign anyone, and you know, see where we can go from there. So this was definitely a good spot to start. I really like Adames. I felt very good about the Braves. I'm shocked that they have not done anything yet, and we can get into all that, but Adames is a good place to start, I think, because he's at a very good position to make some money. He had a great season last year, and the Brewers are an interesting team in an interesting spot, and we talked about that during our prediction episode, so we'll get into the Durbin of it all in a little bit. But that is definitely, it factors in here that they, you know, like Adames is not somebody they were going to bring back, and he doesn't exactly fit their model of tiny and, you know, fast and, you know, great defense. So, you know, he moves on somewhere and gets a bag. Good for him.
Next up, Tyler O'Neill, 3 years, $49 million to the Baltimore Orioles. Seems like moving back Baltimore and left may have played a part here, I would imagine. Can't imagine that right-handed hitters would have been particularly excited to sign in Baltimore with that in place, but they do seem to be course correcting a little bit. So they're adding a right-handed power bat here. Should slot into right field, take over Anthony Santander's position. Going to be a super important veteran presence on this team, I think. You know, this is a very young roster. They have been incredibly reluctant, probably more so than any other organization in the league, certainly any other organization with the potential for the future that they have, to, you know, spend on veteran players, go out and make trades, free agent signings that would help them win immediately. They've been very, very conservative when it comes to building around their youth. They tanked for so long. They drafted a bunch of number one picks, as is the Mike Elias way. It worked in Houston. Apparently is going to work in Baltimore as well. It will not work anywhere else because now that there is a draft lottery, so you can't just tank. Tyler O'Neill, I think, is going to be a very good presence for them. I mean, especially after two consecutive playoff faceplants, you know, they have looked awful in October. O'Neill could, you know, maybe be a guy that could get a little bit of capture some lightning in a bottle, maybe get a big hit to make it so that they score more than one run in two games the next time they're in the playoffs.
Does the number surprise you at all?
Not really. I mean, they have so much free payroll right now. Like, they got to spend somewhere. They've got a new owner, David Rubenstein, who is very open to being able to spend. I saw a report just last week that he has given Mike Elias the green light to spend money, go out and make moves, and Elias just isn't doing it. So, yeah, I mean...
That's the thing. It's a weird place to go. I mean, this really... So that's... I get that you like him as a veteran presence. I don't like this move. I guess he kind of fulfills a need. You're expecting to lose Santander. And by expecting, I mean, I think you've resigned yourself to let him go somewhere else.
Yeah, they will.
So you need a new, you know, outfield bat with a little bit of a pop. So, like, okay, sure. Like, Tyler O'Neill can fit that. This is a team that should be going after bigger names. And not that there's, like, a ton of free agent names for the outfield. It's just, like, this is not, like, why aren't you in on a Teoscar Hernandez? You know? Like, that's where you should be looking. Like, I don't get why this is where you go first. If you're going to spend $50 million in the offseason, I think you could probably get Teoscar Hernandez for, like, maybe a little bit more than that. And that's the kind of guy that you need. You need a playoff guy who's been there, done that. I just feel like this is not the kind of guy who you need to bring in off of a rough season in Boston for the team. I mean, not for him necessarily, although I don't think his numbers were anything super special. But it's just, you're the Orioles that are talking a really, really big game every season about how good you are and how good you're going to be. And just you wait, look at this young core. Tyler O'Neill does not fit into this whole thing that they have going on. And if you look at his spray chart, like, I see why. I think maybe they're just getting him to prove their point that they fixed their wall and left. But part of that could be from playing in Boston too, because he's got a ton of homers to left field. Big time pole hitter on the right side of the plate. He's just not, I think, the perfect fit for an Orioles team that needs to add a veteran presence. You're right. I think there are better options. I kind of wish they went somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's still a path for them to get to that roster that we were expecting them to build. Like, I had them signing three different left-handed starting pitchers this offseason. I had them getting Freed, Kikuchi. I think the third one was Manaea. Yeah, it's a little strange. I'm not sure why they haven't been in on as much pitching. They did get that Sugano guy who was posted from Japan this year. They signed him yesterday.
35.
Yeah, so it's like, that's still going to be an important piece, but it's not the big move that we need them to make and that we've been expecting them to make for what feels like 4 years now. So, yeah, that's about it on Tyler O'Neill. Next up, Luis Severino to the Athletics. Huh? What is that about?
Yeah, play the, where's the Tim Allen sound? Yeah, this one's weird.
3 years, $67 million, the biggest contract signing in Oakland Athletics, well, not Oakland anymore, the biggest contract signing in Athletics history. That made me sad to say.
God. Yeah, that's awful.
It feels like a bit of a flare gun signing to me, in the sense that I don't know how much excitement you can build up for the Athletics to be playing in Vegas right now. I mean, the roster is not very good. So, like, a signing like this feels like not necessarily a pivot because the team is still owned by John Fisher and he'll never pivot to spending as much money as he should on his team. It feels like a move to say, pay attention to us, we're here, and to sort of give a false signal to the league and to the Players Association, which was about to file a grievance, by the way, against the Athletics and still might for all I know.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
with this.
I think that's the big the big thing.
Yeah. They were being handed a lot of money in the revenue sharing, which they opted into, which is why they couldn't get a top 10 pick, and they weren't spending. So
what's up
getting
with that?
Getting a government handout and then he's a welfare queen, you know? So it's not great. This billionaire is really kind of, you know, I'm sure that he would have some very interesting thoughts on that prospect.
But I don't think billionaires have any interesting thoughts.
That's a good point. they passed Eric Chavez's 6-year, $66 million extension from 2004. And do you know the number that Seve signed for off the top of your head?
Yes, 3 years, $67 million.
3 for 67. Their last was 6 for 66. So part of me thinks that they were just like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sign the biggest contract in A's history. In 20 years, we've had the same big contract for 20 years. And we need to spend some money. Otherwise, I'm going to baseball prison. They're like, all right, so who do you want? They're like, well, let's get someone from a big market. How about New York? Who's a free agent out in New York? And they're like, well, we got Luis Severino. You could go get him. They're like, great. What's the number again? 66? Give him 67. See if he takes that. And he did. And that is very depressing. It's also kind of funny because they now have to lose a draft pick again because Seve got a qualifying offer. So an A's team that has no talent, or minimal talent, I shouldn't say none, is not playing in a city with a Major League Baseball stadium, barely has a fan base, is now forfeiting a draft pick that would be essential to them to build because they're, again, having no fans and playing in a minor league stadium for years, which means you're probably not going to want to spend a lot of money. Not that they do anyway, but they now are going to be forfeiting another draft pick. They can't draft in the top 10 again, you know, this season, which is why they have the 11th, I believe, if you want to correct me on that.
That seems right.
It is a bad situation.
The White Sox couldn't be in the top either. They were in the same situation. I think that's just because they were in the lottery too many years in a row. Like, you can't be in it that many years in a row and continue getting those picks.
I think it was that and the revenue share. Yeah, also, but maybe
the combination
of the two. I'm not sure. Either way. I'm glad that tanking doesn't work, although it does kind of, at least when teams are terrible, you can convince yourself as a fan that it is, you know, worth it. And when you have a terrible owner who's just profiteering off of, you know, something that should be for enjoyment, there's no upside. Like, I'm a football Giants fan of the New York football variety, and they're terrible right now, but I can be like, hey, first pick. And I'm not saying that they should give first picks out to the worst teams because, you know, not a great system either in baseball. But at least when they're terrible, I can have that to look forward to. If you're an Oakland A's fan, if you're an Oakland sports fan in general, I am so sorry because this is just like, it's awful. It's just so awful. Everything is terrible about them and it's not getting any better.
There is actually one more.
And I love
move.
Seve, by the way. I don't blame him for taking the money, but it's
no,
a little
no, me
sad.
Neither. I get it. Yeah, you get paid, you get paid. He'll play wherever. The A's did actually make one more move that I was going to discuss a little bit later, but I feel like it ties into what we're talking about right now. So I will just bring this up and then we'll cross it off the docket later on. They traded for Jeffrey Springs from the Rays, which I also found to be pretty interesting.
That's another one.
And they traded Joe Boyle, who, I mean, he's got great stuff. Like, his fastball is daunting, but he can't put it in the zone. So you get the sense that the Rays
the
are going to say,
gonna teach him,
hey, Joe,
put it in the zone.
Throw the fastball into the zone, and then he's going to become like one of the game's best pitchers at just like that. Like,
throw strikes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Bit of a simplistic way to look at it, but hey, I mean, it could be that easy with the Rays. Who knows? They also got Will Simpson and Jacob Waters, two people who I will not pretend to know a thing about. I had not heard either of those names. You do? Who's Will Simpson?
I do. I, you know, work minor league stuff, so I would just see his name here and there, but that's about it.
Fair enough.
There, you know, I also am very acutely aware of, or I try to make myself acutely aware of when the Rays do anything, because it means that they're probably finding some kind of diamond in the rough who might be beneficial to know about. So I just kind of like to look into stuff when they do things. So it's something to be a little excited about, I think.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I felt that way with some of the trades they made last year, like when they traded Randy Arozarena. I was immediately like, well, okay, yep. I guess I have to have Aiden Smith on my radar. I probably have to bump him up the board a little bit. I think they got Brody Hopkins back in that deal as well.
They did.
Yeah, that's who it was.
He looks great.
He does. I completely agree.
He's going to be a stud.
I snatched him
great
up in
name
a few of,
too.
I would agree. I actually snatched him up in a few of my dynasty leagues when he got traded, and then that certainly looks pretty good. I think he's gonna be pretty solid for them this year. But felt the same way about Jackson Bowmeister. They got from the Orioles, I think, in the Zach Littell trade. Zach Eflin.
There you go. I was gonna say, I think.
Yeah, Littell, they still have Zach Littell.
I'm pretty sure.
You're totally right. Whenever the Rays go out and they like acquire a prospect who, I mean, if they acquire a prospect that you've never heard of, then you're like, oh great, this guy is going to turn into a superstar out of nowhere.
He's gonna be a stud.
Right? If they get a guy that you have heard of, it just sort of acts as like confirmation bias if you thought that that guy was good. Whether or not that line of thinking is actually valid, I mean, remains to be seen. I'm not sure that that is 100%, you know, accurate. Like, you know, they're going to get some guys who don't turn into anything too, just like every other team. And then they get a comp pick back as well in this, which is pretty important because you feel like they're going to nail that pick.
They have the scariest front office.
And with the like economic status of the draft, that might alter their strategy as well for how they approach next year's crop. I just had a couple more just because I wanted to say that we mentioned these signings before we sort of let them go. I don't have a whole lot to say, but those are Frankie Montas to the Mets, which we actually did talk about last week a little bit because we talked about the Mets, and Clay Holmes. Yep. They signed both of those pitchers. The only real update...
Stupid, weird, and bad.
It is strange. The only real update I have to what I said last week is that Clay Holmes today went out and said that he wants to throw 160 innings this year, which I think is bold.
About, his arm's going to break.
Yeah, I mean, there were about 60 guys in the whole league last year that threw 160 innings. Clay Holmes has never thrown more than 70 innings in a season. He last started a game in 2018. So, we'll see.
He's welcome to try.
He sure is welcome to try. I don't feel as confident in that as the Mets clearly do, but you know, we have seen success stories as of late of these converted relievers, you know, that we talked about last week with Reynaldo Lopez, Mike King, and Jordan Hicks. To an extent, Hicks hasn't been as great as the other two.
And Mike King also was a long man. So,
yeah.
Yep. You know, it's and Reynaldo Lopez, by the way, was a starter before he was a reliever.
And then Michael Conforto is the last one before we get into these past few days of moves. Conforto went to the Dodgers, 1 year, $17 million. They had an open outfield spot. I think this is a great signing for them. He's going to rake. He's a great hitter.
He's gonna hit 35 homers.
He totally is. The one thing, though, it does kill the prediction that I cooked up on our Patreon a couple weeks ago, which was that they would trade for Lars Nootbaar from the Cardinals, who I think is a guy with really good StatCast data that just hasn't been able to put up the results for some reason. I feel like players like that always benefit from leaving St. Louis. So I sort of felt like that could be a potential Dodger move, but not going to happen now that they have Michael Conforto.
Also, ready? Team Japan connection there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You want to get into the big trades now?
Yeah, I think we probably should, right? I mean, is there any other signing? Like, I mean, Shane Bieber going back to Cleveland was surprising. I don't know if you want to...
I did have him later on the docket. We could talk about that real quick. Shane Bieber back to the Guards for 2 years. I like this for both teams. I think they've had a good fit. They've had a good thing going on there for a while. They know each other well. Bieber knows the ballpark. The organization knows him, especially when he's rehabbing from an injury still. Just might be a good move.
I think they'd be the one to take it on, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I get that. I was way off on my contract prediction. I thought Shane Bieber was going to get paid this offseason. Yeah. I still think he's going to get paid eventually, but it does make sense that it seems to be a case where he needs to go out and prove that he can stay healthy and continue to be dominant before a team commits that amount of money to him. So shorter deal for Bieber, but he's going to stay in Cleveland and he's got to prove a little bit more that he can do what he was capable of doing in 2021, for example, when he had a really great season.
I agreed with you. I thought he would have gotten a little bit more money. You're right. I mean, he really needs to prove that he can still do it. I just, for a guy that we've seen be so dominant, he's only 30. I know he's had a ton of injuries and he's injured now, but it's just, you know, $26 million over 2 years feels very light for him. Also, I mean, we could talk about Snell. We could talk about Fried. I like the pitching that has gone so far. There is still a lot of pitching to be signed, which is why I think, you know, we'll probably end up revisiting some of these. But I don't know if you want to touch on the, like, because again, I think the trades are more interesting. Like, what do you want to, how do you want to do this?
Yeah, I think I'm down to just get into some of the big trades if we want to do an old without sure. further ado. So why don't we start with Mr. Garrett Crochet, who was the big name this offseason that everyone was practically certain would be dealt. It was just a matter of where. There were a few major contenders who seemed to have the prospect capital and the window of contention necessary to make it happen. Those teams, I thought, included the Baltimore Orioles, who I did predict to go out and get him. But, you know, given some of the Mike Elias shit that we've been talking about, maybe is why they were not as active. They were not as willing to go deal a Kobe Mayo or a Heston Kjerstad, maybe even a Samuel Basayo. I guess they want to keep all those guys and find pitching elsewhere. I thought the Los Angeles Dodgers were a contender. The Yankees probably dipped their toe into the ring. I don't know that they had the prospects to make it happen. I never really took that too seriously. Neither did I with the Mets. I felt like the Mets were in the same boat as the Yankees, where they just didn't really have the prospects to make it happen. And then the other contender was the Boston Red Sox, and that is who went out and landed Garrett Crochet. The official trade was Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Chase Meadroth, and Wickelman Gonzalez in a 4-for-1 for Garrett Crochet. I have a lot of thoughts on this deal, but I will kick it to you first. I'll see what you got to say about this.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I'm assuming you were too. This prospect haul feels like hefty. Like, I know Braden Montgomery was the what was he, their first overall pick last year, and then they, you know, ended up getting like the same slot again, so I guess that's really kind of a wash. But Teal, I feel like I've been, you know, been very familiar with him for a long time. Feels like he was going to be part of that Red Sox core that was coming, you know, seeing him get dealt. Crochet is a good piece, but the Red Sox have now done this like a couple years in a row where they've made a move that you'd make if you were a piece away from either winning or contending when they are not. And I am not sure exactly how to feel about it. I don't think they should be dealing from their farm just yet, because it is a very good farm system. So I don't know. I was surprised. You know more about this stuff than I do, though, so please hit it.
Sure. Well, my main thought about this is that this trade, almost like no other, highlights the importance of drafting efficiently, because the Boston Red Sox in the past two drafts had players fall to them in 2023 with pick 14 and last year with pick 12, who by all accounts should not have been there. Players who were projected as potential top five, top seven, maybe guys in their classes, and who for whatever reason fell in the draft. And
right.
In 2023, that was Kyle Teal, who was the best college catcher far and away in that class. I had him in my mock draft that year going to, I think, Oakland, or I could be mistaken, maybe Oakland, maybe the Royals. But the Royals are kind of the team that I wanted to talk
you
about.
You had him
there.
Going to the A's at
I'm going
six.
To the A's at six. Okay, got it. Yeah, I had him going six. He ended up going 14. The Royals drafted Blake Mitchell, a high school catcher, over him, which seemed like a bit of an oversight at the time, and I think still is. If you ask any Royals fan, Blake Mitchell's great. I don't want to say anything bad about Blake Mitchell, but if you ask Kansas City fans, would you rather have Blake Mitchell or Kyle Teal right now? I think they would all say Kyle Teal, and I would not blame them. So yeah, it was a steal for the Red Sox at the time. I groaned when they drafted Kyle Teal because I thought he was going to be their future franchise catcher, and I'd have to watch him beat up on the Yankees for 20 years. And then last year, they got Braden Montgomery at 12, which was a little bit of a different situation because he suffered a major leg injury in the College World Series that, I mean, it shouldn't have too much like long-term effect on him. Like, I expect him to make a full recovery very easily, but I think it did turn off a few teams that likely would have picked him in that like 5 through 10 range, and they just ended up going with other players. Like, when you look at those drafts, like, there's not a lot of players picked in that range that I feel like, oh, that was a huge whiff, you know? Like, I don't really feel that way about, you know, Noble Meyer or Tommy Troy, who I feel like have been the worst guys from a performance standpoint thus far. Like, Noble Meyer had a very disappointing first year in the minor leagues, and Tommy Troy suffered a lot of injuries, but when he was out there, was not very productive. Whether that's because of the injuries, I think still remains to be seen. You know, he's a guy that I think could still make...
How old is Troy?
23, 22.
Yeah, Meyer's 19. I was going to say, I knew he's younger than the rest, so I think he probably gets some extra time.
Those two guys now headline this package to get the Red Sox their ace, this 25-year-old left-handed pitcher with some of the most lethal stuff I've ever seen. Fastball-cutter combination that will just terrorize hitters. Threw a few sinkers towards the end of last year. The Red Sox have been kind of known the past year or so to have guys stop throwing four-seam fastballs, so maybe we'll get a few more cutters and sinkers out of Crochet, but when you have a four-seam fastball like
what?
He does... What'd you say?
Out of what?
Oh, I said Crochet, didn't I? I used to pronounce his name like that. I thought for some reason that's what it was, but out of Crochet. We'll get...
Not as bad. A friend of mine says crotchet when he is trying to say the verb crochet. So
oh, jeez.
We've hammered him for that. Yeah, so this guy would be his worst nightmare.
Trent Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Chase Meadroth. When I see that name, I think of like a Twitter discourse from this past year where a bunch of guys got really upset at each other over how good Chase Meadroth was. Because he's kind of this like smaller, like middle infielder with really good contact skills for the Red Sox. So there were some Dustin Pedroia comps that made a few people mad.
There's been a few Pedroia comps that have been thrown around recently. Caleb Durbin was Pedroia'd a lot. If you're a short middle infielder who's kind of scrappy, you're going to get Pedroia'd.
And in both cases, it seems like that was just the front office trying to bump up that guy's trade value, because both of those players got traded in the past week.
Yep,
but yeah, totally. I wouldn't be remotely surprised if, that's a weird verb, if the White Sox were able to acquire three of their long-term starters in this trade, in Teal, Montgomery, and Meadroth. Wickelman Gonzalez is a pretty good pitcher as well. I don't know quite as much about him. His numbers in some of the lower minors have been really impressive. That doesn't always translate. I mean, you need good development. You need guys who are able to have their skills translate to more talented hitters, and it will remain to be seen if Wickelman Gonzalez is that. The White Sox, they've got a little bit of a farm system now, you know? They've got, I mean,
yeah,
it was a down
hole.
Year
That'll
for
help.
Colson Montgomery, but he'll be their shortstop this year for sure at some point. Who else? I mean, Teal's now going to be the catcher, Montgomery in the outfield. I mean, yeah, Hagen Smith, their draft pick from this past year. So they've got some guys, but it still seems like it's going to be bleak times in that side of Chicago. I don't remember if they're the north side or the south side.
They're the south side. You should remember from the their City Connect, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and the Cubs say that.
They've
like,
got those, yeah.
That's right, okay.
The Northsiders are the Cubs. Yeah, there you go.
Do we have anything else on Crochet?
Well, more so just on the White Sox. I'm just curious if you think that they're going to be able to exceed their win total from last season.
I think they basically have to, right?
I think they have to. I don't think it's possible.
It's arguably impossible for them to lose more games than they lost last year. They would have to pitch me every game if they wanted to do that.
I will say this does not affect them in the short term. So, you know, that's the one thing. This hurts their, you know, their roster in the immediate, but long term, I guess you have to be more excited. But they need like bodies to throw out there for next year. And I guess that's where Mike Tauchman comes in, who's their big acquisition in the offseason, along with Matt Theis and Austin Slater. They definitely get some stuff that can help them, but it's, I don't know. It'll be interesting also to see if maybe they trade one of either Edgar Cuero or Kyle Teal again and, like, flip him for something, because they're, you know, about the same age, both big prospects. I mean, you could expect that maybe one of these guys could get dealt. Catching prospects are fickle. We all know how my brother feels about that. He's very outspoken about catching
prospects. That's right. That's right.
They should stick around.
I forgot about Edgar, honestly. That's right. They do have that catching duo now. So, yeah, maybe future moves are in the work for the White Sox. Who knows?
Pitching somewhere. It's always possible. Good job by the White Sox, I guess. You've got to start somewhere. Not a bad place to go.
I think it's a good return. I think there was absolutely a world in which they traded him, and then I was like, what the hell did you do that for? You didn't get anything. That is not the case here.
Right.
They got at least two very good players that should slot into their lineup for a long time. So, and they were never going to win with
Garrett. How about how this affects the Sox? Because I do stand by my saying that this is now a couple years in a row where they have made moves that it feels like they are not yet in a state to make. And I don't know, I'm surprised that they did this. I knew that every team wanted Garrett Crochet. It's still, their rotation does look good now too, and that's a good lefty to stick on top of it. He's a great pitcher, you know, he'll probably play pretty well in Fenway with deep outfield or deep center, and they've got a good defense. But it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know why they're shipping off young pieces that I feel like they would rather rely on. Kyle Teal feels like he was, you know, ready to fill in soon in Boston, and now, you know, they're going to have to rethink what they're doing there. And it's not like they have a good catcher at the major league level either, so.
Yeah, I think this is the year that things are going to sort of start to click for the Red Sox, because they had, before this trade, they had four guys that were right on the brink of joining their big league roster, all of whom were, like, elite prospects. They still have three of them, though, with Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, and Marcelo Meyer. Three guys that will certainly debut this year in Fenway. Guys with sky-high potential, Roman Anthony especially. That guy, I think, for is sure. going to be a superstar. Christian Campbell had maybe the best season of any minor leaguer last year. So two guys that really could be great players for the Red Sox for a long time that they did not trade in this deal. I don't think there was ever a world in which they would trade them in that move. So I think that they did well, too, in that, you know, they were able to keep that trio. They're going to have to look elsewhere for their long-term catcher now. Maybe we see more Connor Wong than we would have. But yeah, I expected Teal to slot in there this year, and now it's just going to be in Chicago instead of Boston. But I don't think they're going to be competitors this year in the American League East, but I do think they'll be an above 500 team. And I think maybe 2026 and beyond, we might start to be afraid of the Red Sox again, at least to some extent. Next move.
What's next?
Kyle Tucker traded.
Yeah, there you go.
I did not expect this.
Me neither.
I put a couple like deep hypotheticals into my Patreon article for Vladdy and Kyle Tucker, just what I thought a hypothetical return would look like for those players, even though I did not expect either of them to actually be traded. I got the teams wrong. I switched them up because I predicted the Cubs getting Vlad in that, and I wish I had done it for Kyle Tucker, but hindsight is 20/20.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, no, I know. I was wrong about the return. I had it more of minor league based because the Cubs farm system is so strong right now. The Astros were more interested in big league talent. They got Isak Paredes back, Hayden Wesneski, two guys who have major league experience at this point. Paredes is kind of like an extreme case where he is like literally built for the Crawford boxes. Like, he's going to be a better player in Houston than he would be really anywhere else in the league, I think. Like, expected home runs, I think, for last year literally doubled when you put him in Houston as opposed to Chicago. It went from 13 to 26. So he's a real...
If you look at his spray chart right now, there's a lot of doubles. There's even a single that was way out there. I'm assuming that's a Fenway single. But yeah, his spray chart has some added homers that are scary to think about.
Absolutely.
The Tucker thing I was surprised about mainly because I didn't think that it was actually going to materialize at all. I thought that maybe, you know, these trade talks were just them kind of throwing it out there that we could be interested at the deadline if things don't go well this season. I never, ever thought in a million years that this team would actually consider trading him preseason, offseason. And I did get my hopes up that the Yankees might get involved. I think people are kind of a little overblowing the fact that the front offices would never actually do any business together. I don't think that's necessarily true. But it does make sense that it would take a lot, namely Luis Gil, to get that deal done. Thing is, though, if the deal was just Luis Gil for Kyle Tucker and maybe another, you know, another piece from the Yankees heading over, I would have done that in a heartbeat. I think Kyle Tucker fits very well in Yankee Stadium. He fits very well in Wrigley, too. And if he'll look good in a Cubs uniform, it'll be good to have him in the National League. I'm curious how he'll fit in Wrigley, though, in general. Wrigley, we know, is a tough place to play. As far as the outfield is concerned, it's a tough to defend. So I'll be kind of interested to see if his numbers are as good, his power numbers are as good. I'm actually pulling him up right now. Let's see here. It looks like he'll be losing a few homers due to the deep corners in Wrigley, at least from last year. So I'm not too surprised. He is such a good hitter that it won't really be a problem. He might end up with a lot more doubles. You know, maybe he'll change his swing up a little bit and try to shoot for him more. This is a good move by the Cubs, who I think are always trying to contend without doing something too drastic. So this is a good spot for them to go. I don't think they'll end up getting burned by this deal. I'm shocked that Paredes was enough to get this done with some other pieces. I don't think you can really be mad at it. I doubt they'll bring him back next year, but just for this year, I guess it's not a bad move, especially they can now safely get away from Cody Bellinger, which we can touch on in a minute. But Tucker getting moved was shocking, and I like it for the Cubs, but again, it's a little, it feels like it's a way station for him. He's not going to be sticking around for too long.
It all seemed to come together pretty quickly. I mean, I like this deal a lot for the Cubs. I mean, they're going out and they're getting that superstar that they have not had for years now, you know, that they really have not been able to acquire since they traded that trio of Bryant, Javi Baez, and Anthony Rizzo a few years back, which, by the way, that has aged very well, the fact that they got away from those three guys they did. We gave them a lot of shit. I mean, we didn't because we weren't a podcast yet, but people gave them a lot of shit at the time for that, and for decent reason, but it has worked out very well in the cases of those three players. But now they go out and they get Kyle Tucker, who is a top 10 hitter in all of baseball. I mean, he's one of the guys who his game is going to translate no matter where he's playing. You know, you could even put him in San Francisco with their hellish right center field, and I would still want him on my team. Like, that is an incredible player. The Cubs fans should be thrilled to have him for this upcoming season. I am very happy to have him off the Astros. And yeah, I mean, I'm really surprised that they were willing to move him as quickly as they did. I think it says a lot about how they felt their chances of re-signing him were looking. It seems like they must have thought that that was an impossibility. They decided to cash out when they did. And, you know, talked about Paredes
Wrigley
already.
Wrigley is 24th in park factor, by the way.
Yeah, that's not great, but it is is. Hayden Wesneski, he's all right. He's an okay pitcher. I mean, he'll probably slot into the back end of the Astros rotation. I mean, you know, maybe their pitching team will be able to cook something up with him, but I'm not necessarily sold on him really being too much of an impact piece. What I am very interested in is Cam Smith, who was drafted right around the same time Braden Montgomery was last year. I think they were actually back-to-back picks, and both of them were traded within a couple days of each other, which is kind of interesting. But Cam Smith, third baseman out of Florida State, he had a really great showing after the draft. He dominated the lower levels of the minors, low A, high A, completely tore those up, and was also hitting pretty well at double A as well towards the end of the season. So I think, you know, with this being like another right-handed sort of power guy, he does have to lift the ball more, but if the Astros are able to work on that with him, it could be another Crawford Boxes demon. So I think the Astros found their third
baseman.
This is also
another first round pick from last year getting traded in the offseason in two big trades. So that's a little odd. I mean, the Cubs are another team who ended up with a very good draft position for this season again. So maybe that factors into it. You figure you're not really losing out on too much if you hope that you could replicate, you know, a similar kind of prospect. But I'm very impressed with the Cubs turning Scott Efros and Christopher Morel into Kyle Tucker, like by the transitive property there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good stuff. That's well, again, as you say, Kim Smith kind of could burn you. And Houston in general is a team that you have to, like the Rays, be afraid of when they do things. So, you know, good call on that. But
and then I guess the last thing I want to say about that trade is that the Yankees seem to be the other contenders there. Whether or not there was legitimacy to that or if they were just being used as a smokescreen, I'm not really sure. But it did always seem like the Cubs were the heavy favorites of the two just because their farm system is so much better right now. They had way more to play with. They had a guy who's specifically fit for Houston that did not play well after they traded for him at the deadline. So it really made a lot of sense for Paredes to end up in Houston, for Cam Smith and up in Houston. The surprising thing to me really is that the Astros were willing to move on from the last year of Kyle Tucker's contract. I think there's not really any point in time over the past few years where had you told me that, I would have believed you. But that's where we're at.
It does make sense. It makes sense. They don't sign people to long-term contracts. Even Jose Altuve, they didn't go above 5 years. That's just their organizational philosophy, which you can't be too mad about, because every time, you know, these organizations do give out these massive contracts, the back ends do kill you for a little bit. So you can't be super mad at them for not doing it. It's a little cheap, and it takes away some joy, I guess, from your fans, or just like some attachment, I guess. And it's frustrating that you have to then lose out on Kyle Tucker. If you know that you're not going to re-sign him, and you're the Astros, who are probably going to turn these guys into very effective pieces, there's not a real downside. Like, I mean, yes, you're losing out on Kyle Tucker, who's a very, very, very good baseball player. I mean, he's going. Like, you know, it's you know he's not coming back. You know you're not bringing him back. You might as well get something for him. So his value is probably just about as high here as it would be midseason. It might be a little bit higher, and you could squeeze out something more for a very desperate team. But that is rougher to, you know, you don't want to give up on a season by giving away Kyle Tucker then if you're, you know, competing. So not a bad call.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Next up, Devin Williams to the Yankees. Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yes, it sure is. Yeah, the Yankees, yeah, the Yankees get their closer, their bullpen stud, the guy that we had wanted so badly in last year's postseason. You know, Luke Weaver obviously stepped up in a huge way, but it was obvious that the Yankees needed a power arm out of the bullpen. I mean, especially a power lefty, which Devin Williams is not, but that's beside the point. But they do go out and get their closer here. The Brewers were always going to trade Williams this offseason. They did not want to pay him. They are happy with Trevor Bigill, Abner Uribe, and some of these guys that are just pretty lethal relievers. Think that they're going to be able to step into that closer role and move away from the $10 million or so that they were set to pay Devin Williams. So he comes to the Yankees. Nestor Cortez and the previously mentioned Caleb Durbin going to Milwaukee. Brody, what did you make of this?
So I'm obviously very excited for Devin Williams to come to the Yanks and hammer down the back end of the bullpen. I was surprised this came together the way that it did, and so fast. I don't recall there being a ton of buzz about it right before it happened. Like I think I was at work, so it all kind of just sort of broke. Not a lot of noise coming out of it. I mean, if you can bring in a Devin Williams to your bullpen and all it costs is a superfluous starting pitcher who's a soft-throwing lefty and a prospect whose value you pumped up like a dead tire with a bike pump, I think you do that. Like, you do that in a heartbeat. The fact that they were able to do this, and again, yeah, it's 1 year, but it's also, Nestor is going to be a free agent at the end of this season, and also you don't need him. Durbin is, I think, a lottery ticket. I really have a hard time believing that the Yankees believed that he would actually be slotting in as their everyday second baseman. I may have said that in the last couple episodes. That was before he got traded and when I did believe them, because I don't know how to read Brian Cashman fully yet, I guess, even though I thought that I was starting to fully understand the way that they move. Sometimes they can really throw a wrench at you, and you realize that you are being played as much as the rest of the league. Of course, Caleb Durbin, the 26-year-old out-of-nowhere prospect, was not going to be their starting second baseman on opening day in a season that they are now trying to recover some face and save some face after an embarrassing loss in the World Series. Genius by Brian Cashman. I mean, this is like one of his best moves in a while. And Williams going right into the back end of the Yankee bullpen is a great, great place for him. Yankees needed a closer, as you said. It's always a thing that they've leaned on. When the league had gotten away from closers in general and started doing more committee stuff at the back end of the bullpen, Yankees still had closers. They were going out and bringing in Chapman. That's kind of been the way they do things. Clay Holmes, the same thing. The closer is coming back a little bit, I think. Like, there's a few right now that are around the league that are legit closers, where for a few years there it seemed like there really was, like, I mean, Hader and I guess Class A, and that's kind of it, and Chapman, I guess.
Helsley's been good too.
Not many. And Helsley. But he's, even then, like, on the newer side. But my point being that it had been a while. And
you said Class A, Mason Miller?
I just
mean,
like, this is... Oh, I didn't say Mason Miller. I did say Class A. But I did not say Mason Miller. Mason Miller is a good point there, too. But, yeah, I mean, this is a great move. It really is. Cashman, you know, I think he's sick of hearing people say they want his bald head hanging from the freeze. So I think he's trying to really start to win people back and have some fun with his moves and not just, you know, sign the big name. And I think he's having fun this offseason. I heard that today from there's like a big Yankee fan who posted a video where he was talking about how, you know, this is kind of like the offseason that Cashman's dreamed about. I think he's absolutely right. I feel like Cashman is just wheeling and dealing. And we're lucky that, you know, we're Yankee fans in the way that they're really having a crazy offseason. They are by far the most interesting team so far this offseason. And it's fun to be able to talk about them like this because they really are making moves.
I completely agree. You feel like he's just kind of able to just go into like free play mode and do whatever he wants with so many
free agents
available, guys
like...
available for trade, you know, people that are able to be acquired for the prospects that the Yankees do have. Not so many players with value that we can't match with a lackluster farm system. You know, maybe cost the team Kyle Tucker, but like I said, I kind of don't think the Astros ever would have traded him to the Yankees. I don't see them pulling that trigger. But yeah,
I think they could have matched that package, but I think they also wanted Paredes. So
Devin Williams' changeup might be the best pitch in all of baseball. So when that becomes available, you have to go out and trade for it if you're a team looking to go back to the World Series in need of elite bullpen help. I mean, he is one of the most difficult pitchers to hit in the league. I'm very excited to be able to watch him out of the pen next year. I think he's going to be a really great closer for the Yankees. And then for the Brewers, Nestor, like, back-end rotation guy, obviously, you know, he's fun to watch sometimes. Sometimes he is not fun to watch at all. So the Brewers will be dealing with that and some of his herky-jerky motions and hesitations before pitches and just all of the extremely Nestor shit that he brings to the game. And then
his weird athletic play that he'll make once a season.
Yeah. And then Caleb Durbin, middle infielder, speedster, super fast, does not really impact the ball much. Basically the same player as Bryce Terang. So now they have two Bryce Terangs, I guess. That's a little interesting. I guess I expected...
Don't forget Sal Frelick.
Yeah, well, he's in the outfield, but Sal Frelick, yeah.
Well, he can play the infield.
Can he?
Yeah, I think he can.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he has.
But
I think he plays everywhere. That's what I was saying earlier on. Like, that he's exactly their archetypical Brewers player right now that they have like a million of.
I think I expected the Brewers to get a little bit more than they did, but yeah, I mean, I'm happy with this as a fan of the New York Yankees.
Closer on a one-year deal is tough to
get
too much value out of, and they got a lefty starting pitcher who, you know, former All-Star, the whole deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, it's not a bad haul. It really isn't. So you did get cashed a little bit, but it's still not a bad haul.
We got a few more moves to discuss before we head out of here for the week. Well, I guess we'll stick with the Yankees. We haven't discussed Max Fried yet. Officially announced the signing today, 8 years, $218 million. Fried, lowest ERA in the league since 2021, I believe is the stat. No one with a lower ERA than Max Fried in that time span. Really great at initiating soft contact, difficult pitcher to pick up. Left-handed guy. I mean, I'm very happy with this signing. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Getting him for less than 30 AAV, I think, is a win from a front office standpoint. And then, you know, when I look at the Yankees rotation as well, I was kind of like, did we really need Max Fried? And then I took a little bit closer look, and oh yeah, they badly needed Max Fried, because beyond Cole and Carlos Rodon, I mean, it's a little bit shaky. You know, I like Clark Schmidt, but I think I like him as a 4 or 5 guy. Luis Gil,
I like his upside.
Very good pitcher.
I think you're right.
Don't know if you're ever going to get like a 200 inning season out of Luis Gil. That would very much surprise me. But he did win Rookie of the Year last year. Always going to be pretty erratic. But that was apparently the guy that the Astros wanted for Kyle Tucker, and Cashman was unwilling to do that. Which a little, that surprised me a little bit, but yeah, I mean, a rotation of Cole, Rodon, Max Fried, Luis Hill, and Clark Schmidt, I think is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I completely agree. This was a really good move again by the Yanks. It's a little long. 8 years is a bit much, but they wanted to keep the AAV down so that they can keep their luxury tax down and, you know, hopefully go out and sign some more guys. So whatever, you know, it's not my money. I don't care. By the end of the contract at, you know, 38, I don't know, guys pitch for a while. It'll be fine. I really like that they went after his ground ball percentage, or at least that they targeted a guy with a very good ground ball percentage. He's in the 96th percentile of ground ball percentage, which in Yankee Stadium, you got to keep the ball on the ground. And as a lefty, I mean, that's like, he's a perfect guy for this team and a perfect guy to pitch in Yankee Stadium. Also, I mean, your rotation now, if you assume Hill at the 3, I guess, or maybe the 4, depending on where you put Rodon. I mean, Cole, Fried at the 2. Hill 3, Rodon 3, Hill 4, Rodon 4, and Clark Schmidt. That is a hell of a 5. And then, you know, Stroman, if anybody gets hurt, is fine for the regular season. You know, maybe we see Will Warren a little bit this year or something. I don't know. There's some other names you could throw in there. But, like, this is it lengthens it a lot. And the Yankees going fully on the pitching is not too surprising when the bats that are out there are not great. So you might as well go after talent, and this is kind of what I was talking about last week. I wanted them to go after talent and not as much chase the value. And when there's talent staring you in the face, go get it. Max Fried being a perfect fit for the Yanks, perfect fit to pitch in Yankee Stadium, staring right at you, ready for the taking, go get him. And they did. So good job. I like this signing. I'm excited to watch him pitch in the Bronx. And he's already clean-shaven, so problem that Devin Williams has that Max Fried doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I didn't even really consider the Yankees when I was doing free agent predictions for Max Fried. I thought he would either end up a Met or an Oriole or a Red Sox, three teams that I would not have enjoyed seeing him sign with. But hey, I'm very happy to see that the Yankees went out there and got him. We'll see how the contract ages, but he's a guy who I could see staying dominant into his late 30s much more than I could see someone who relies on 100-mile-an-hour fastball and a wipeout slider to do. Fried is a real pitcher's pitcher, and pairing him with Matt Blake is going to be a match made in heaven.
I just realized, I'm looking at my prediction, I had him at 168/7 to the Brewers. So that was, man, you had him at 150/5. We were, I mean, you had the AAV just about, but that is, we were off.
Nobody knows shit about contracts, us especially.
It's true, man. God, man. Well, some of them we were closer than others, but yeah. That's a particularly rough one. But it is a good signing. It really is. And I think we should probably move on to the other Yankee move today.
Yeah, I was going to just finish with that, but sure, why don't we do that right now? As of today, it has been announced Cody Bellinger also joining the New York Yankees. So the trifecta of Devin Williams, Max Fried, and Cody Bellinger coming to the Bronx. Cubs paying $5 million of his salary, so the Yanks are taking on about $20 million a year for the next 2 years on him. Cubs really just wanted to get out of his contract, apparently, because the return is Cody Poteet, who doesn't really matter. And pretty unbelievable that Cashman was able to pull that off. I mean, we give the guy a lot of shit on this podcast. I think when he does something like this, we got to give him his flowers. So, yeah, I mean, getting Cody Bellinger for essentially no return at all, just sort of basically signing him as a free agent for $5 million less than he signed for last year. Like, that works. I'm okay with it. So
yeah, I can't be mad at it. He should, you know, big lefty bat with a lot of upside. You might as well take it.
Yeah, I guess they told him that he would be the starting center fielder for the team. So I assume that will be pushing Jason Dominguez into left. But I'm pretty happy about that. I mean, Cody Bellinger is an above average defender. He's fast, which is not.
I'd rather see him in left field.
I would rather have Jason in center and Cody in left. But maybe that'll be a thing for like the year after, because, you know, Dominguez is going to be his first full season. Bellinger, proven defender, veteran player at this point. You know, maybe it's sort of just to ease Dominguez into being a big league outfielder. Yeah, I mean, it's not really something that I've seen the Yankees have in center field for a while. I mean, Harrison Bader was a great defender out there, but he couldn't really hit all that well. Bellinger does have the potential to be an impact player on both sides of the ball in center field. And after seeing, you know, what the Yankee defense looked like in the World Series, I am very happy to be adding defense to this roster so I don't have to wash my eyes again.
Don't think about the fifth inning again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, he's just kind of what we needed. They still have some other holes that we need to fill out. I actually kind of want to pull up their, let me pull up their roster resource right now, because it, they're, you know, again, great move. Williams is a good move. Fried is a good move. The other two sort of patch up the holes more than this does. They really, really need to get a first baseman at this point. I mean, yes, Cody Bellinger plays first base. I think he would be more valuable for them in the outfield. As you said, he's a good defender, and we saw how much they need that. So you throw him in center, you're going to really need a first baseman. I would not be surprised if Christian Walker is still on the table. You could go Carlos Santana. He's very old. I don't want Pete Alonso. We've talked ad nauseum about this. Ben Rice is not going to be starting at first base, so they're probably going to have to do something. There is a rumor that Nathaniel Lowe is on the trade block, which, if that's true, I mean, I think that that's where you kind of really, you know, push for whatever you can do. If there's a big lefty bat first baseman on the market, whoever it is, not just necessarily Nathaniel Lowe, even though there's not a ton of big lefty first basemen, that's the one that you need to go get. So, you know, that's like the move where I'll be like, okay, cash, good job. Good offseason. You've done everything we needed you to do. Because once that's done, I think you can kind of really take a breath, relax, and, you know, be excited for the season, as I think you already should be, because right now they're looking pretty good. But that is definitely a big thing they need to go out and do.
Yeah, first base is definitely the last key. We'll see who they get, whether it's a free agent or a trade. That seems to be the last glaring hole right now, at least in the starting lineup. You know, they have addressed outfield, addressed the rotation, they've addressed the pen. So yeah, it's been a really interesting offseason from a Yankee standpoint. We'll certainly be talking about it quite a bit more. You want to move on?
Andrés Giménez really quick?
Yes, that was the next one I've got. Andrés Giménez and Nick Sandlin, yeah, going from Cleveland to the Toronto Blue Jays for Spencer Horwitz and Nick Mitchell. And then Spencer Horwitz traded on the same day from the Blue Jays to the Pittsburgh Pirates for Luis Ortiz, Michael Kennedy, and Josh Hader.
From the Guardians.
Oh, what did I say?
From the Blue Jays.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, Spencer Horwitz from the Blue Jays to the Guardians, yes. Then from the Guardians to the Pirates for Luis Ortiz, Michael Kennedy, and Josh Hader. So, Spencer Horwitz.
Yeah, what a move.
Guy who has seen some time at first base and second base, had proven to be a pretty reliable left-handed bat for the Blue Jays when they really needed it. I mean, beyond their like main few guys, they didn't really seem to have a lot of excitement there coming on in terms of like young talent, exacerbated by the fact that Bo Bichette had an all-time stinker of a season. He was big for them down the stretch. I mean, obviously not a team that made it to the playoffs, but seems to be a guy who should stick in the big leagues for a while. And yeah, traded twice in one day. Ends up in Pittsburgh, which I think is pretty interesting for a Pittsburgh team that has a lot of talent, but not a whole lot of depth on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they've had a lot of young pitching success over the past year with Skeens, Jared Jones.
Name one guy.
Bubba Chandler, on the brink of joining the rotation, you know, one of the best pitching prospects who has not debuted yet. Braxton Ashcraft, I mean, Thomas Harrington, you know, they've got a lot of guys that I think are shaping up to be really good pitchers. But
yeah, also when you draft at the top of the draft every year.
But, yeah, and I guess that's why they traded a trio of pitchers to get Horwitz, which I think is pretty interesting from a Guardians standpoint, because now they get Luis Ortiz, who has really good stuff, but never has really put it together for a full season. You know, we've seen a lot of dominant starts from him, but not necessarily a dominant season. So Cleveland is a bit of a pitching factory. Maybe a bit is underselling it, and they're very good at turning guys into stud pitchers. So I could see Luis Ortiz having a really big year for them. I don't know a ton about Michael Kennedy, but Josh Hader, was just drafted this past year out of Wake Forest. So this seems like a trio of guys that the Guardians had their eyes on, were interested in acquiring for the team, and especially in Luis Ortiz's case, I think could be a really big part of their 2025 roster. So, and then, yeah, Andrés Giménez, not much to say about Nick Sandlin, but Giménez going to the Blue Jays, you know, we had seen him play a lot in those few playoff series. Not a great offensive guy. I mean, going to be like an 8 or 9 hitter, but a really great defender. Second base, you know, going to slot in there for the Jays for a long time. I thought he might have had a little more value than he ended up having just because of how many years are left on his contract. You know, I thought that that defense might have had a little bit more trade value than it proved to. I think this is interesting for all three teams involved. I mean, I'm not really sure that any of these teams got worse. Toronto, maybe a little bit confusing for a team that, you know, didn't have a lot of offense towards the bottom of their order last year, going out and dealing Spencer Horwitz for a guy who is proven to be one of the worst bats around baseball, but, you know, sticks in the lineup because his defense is so good. Maybe not the perfect fit for Toronto right now, but, you know, this could work out for them too.
Nick Sandlin has another one of the best pitches in baseball. His split finger is really, really, really good. Not a bad move, of course, if you're taking pitchers from Cleveland, as you said. You know, that's a deep well to drill into. So, you know, not a bad move to pick him up. You know, Blue Jays just need kind of help everywhere. So, good move there. Giménez, yeah, you said it. The guy is not a good hitter, but he really is a wizard defensively. So, you know, it does leave you wondering a little bit because offense is kind of more where they're in need. So I don't hate the move for the Blue Jays. You know, it's not a bad guy to have on your team. Like, you can't be too upset about it. But it doesn't really help you too much. Like, he's not a bad hitter by any means. He's just not, like, a real impact bat. You know, he's like a 250. He's a very average guy. 250, 300 on base, and a 340 slug. 9 homers, and, you know, 30 steals, that'll help you. And again, a fantastic glove. So, I mean, I guess you can't be upset about the trade if you're the Blue Jays. You didn't give much up either. I'm surprised that Spencer Horwitz commands that value, just as you're surprised that Giménez you thought would get more back. But it is, it's interesting that, you know, this, like, Spencer Horwitz gets brought in and flipped immediately. Good hitter, but just, I don't know, I was a little surprised that he was able to get this many names involved for him. And Luis Ortiz is, as you said, too, flashes of dominance and never put it together. So Cleveland is the exact right place for him.
Not too much left to discuss. Just a few more here. We've got Blake Treinen back to the Dodgers. It's nice to say I got one of my free agent predictions correct. And then Nathan Eovaldi back to the Rangers. Eovaldi,
I wanted Eovaldi to head to the Yankees. That's a little surprising that he ended up back. Yeah, I feel like, you know, he's a really good pitcher. I feel like he's been one of those guys who had to reinvent himself as his, you know, very famously electric fastball has sort of waned in recent years. So it's always interesting when a guy is able to do that and come out the other side still being effective. So, I mean, his off-speed fastball is now in the 90th percentile. His fastball is down to 65th. So he's making it work. He's been able to do that. And he's a very, you know, clearly a very smart pitcher. So I just like his guts. He's always shown that he's ready for the big moment. Would have been a good, you know, 1 or 2 year guy for the Yankees, but I do like that he goes back to the Rangers. Seems to be a good fit there. I don't know, Bochy seems to like him, so like, he's a good manager for an old school style of pitcher. So yeah, I mean, you know, I can't be too upset at the Rangers. They still need some more after a very disappointing season, so you might as well start here, bring back one of your guys who definitely is a leader in that clubhouse too, so might as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting rotation right now for the Texas Rangers with Jacob deGrom, who, what's left to be said, best pitcher in the game when he's pitching more than 20 innings a year.
I don't even know if you could say that anymore. There's no proof.
Yeah, fair enough. Nathan Eovaldi now back on the team. John Gray, so three guys mid-30s there. Tyler Malley coming off of Tommy John surgery. We'll see how he looks when he makes his first start of the season. Cody Bradford could slot into a rotation spot, but I imagine it's going to be Kumar Rocker who comes up and is their electric starter in 2025. He absolutely dominated 24. absolutely dominated the upper minors. Yeah, it was really non-linear prospect progression with Kumar Rocker. I mean, we saw the guy.
Yeah, seriously.
He was projected one of the top players in that draft in 2021, ended up going 10th to the Mets, not signing, and then going back into the draft and sort of falling off the map for a while, and then last year turning into just a complete stud. So
I want to talk about prospect fatigue.
Yeah,
for an example.
For sure. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Rangers' rotation looks coming into next year. And then, the Dodger bullpen is the Dodger bullpen. Blake Treinen comes back as one of a few guys who can close out games for them. This definitely helps in the wake of the Brusdar Gratterall injury. I mean, they've still got a bunch of injured starting pitchers as well, with Sheehan, Stone now having shoulder surgery and will be out for all of next year. River Ryan, Tommy John. So, Kopech, Treinen, Evan Phillips, that trio at the back end of the Dodger bullpen is going to be back in action
in
2025.
Are ridiculous. The injured names are ridiculous.
I know.
I mean, they're a factory.
They
it's
sure
scary.
Are. It's pretty crazy. So, yeah, I think that's going to be it. We had so many moves this past week.
Chapman to the Red Sox is really funny, by the way. I just wanted to
say
that.
Yeah, that was a little bit before. I forgot all about it.
Yep,
Chapman to the Red Sox is funny. That did happen. So, I mean, the Sox needed it. Their pen was a disaster. I don't have more than,
it is,
like,
but
20
it's just,
seconds.
They also
to say
have
that.
Kenley Jansen. It's just, you know.
For
it's,
sure.
It's funny. And Tyro Estrada to the Rockies is also funny. I thought that guy was going to be a guy. Now it turns out he's going to go rot in Denver.
It looks like it. Well, I think that is going to be it for us this week. We have discussed all of the moves that there are to discuss. It was a huge week of trades. I mean, Crochet and Tucker alone are two of the most talented players I've seen moved in quite a long time. I don't think we'll be seeing the other major hypothetical that I cooked up with Vlad. I think we're going to see him stay. But hey,
you say that, and now you're going to post this tomorrow,
and then
he's
going to
get traded.
No, literally. That seems to be how these things go. But I think that will do it. This has been the Mudville Podcast. If you are not familiar already with the Mudville Patreon, you can find it at patreon.com/Mudville. It is totally free to sign up and receive updates anytime we put out an episode, whether it is like this one on the main feed or an episode of Mudville at the Movies with myself and Tony Brown, which will be coming around in the next couple of months to talk about a few additional movies, as well as our favorite first watches of the year and our favorite films of 2024. So a lot of exciting content coming onto the podcast in the next couple weeks. You will be able to access it all and receive updates by signing up once again at patreon.com/Mudville. We would really, really appreciate it. If you're not able to do so, please leave a nice review, 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Music, one of those. So that'll be it for us this week. I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I've been your other host, Brody Staub.
And we will see you guys next week.